if Andre played with Anna Lee, I think we would absolutely be talking about him being best man in the world across both disciplines.
Right, I agree. And I think that there might be 5 to 7 guys that if they played with Anna Lee, they would win most of the time.
Keep going. Maybe. Higher, up, higher, up, higher. I would put it to at least the top 10. If right. they played with Anna Lee, they would be favored to win the tournament.
I mean, she is absolutely obscene. She had a little tiff with Hayden Patrickwin. And Hayden Patrickwin told her, your dinks are too high. And she said, don't talk to me like that. And then she proceeded to just fire at his throat for 15 straight points and win a significant percentage of those hands battles against someone who has very good hands. Who else is doing that? No one.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right. It feels right. Legendary.
Yeah, and we're going to see that shadow move throughout the episode too, which is going to be super fun because right now it's just on your chin and it's going to creep up to your mouth and then it's going to creep up to your little nose hairs and it's going to keep creeping up to your little eyeballs. Yes. Okay. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
How is St. George, Utah? I miss going to St. George. It's okay, rabid pickleball community there.
Oh, yeah. So, like, you know, Dave and I, we've been working together almost every time in the booth. And, you know, we get some love. We'll take some pictures. Some people say, hey, I like what you guys do, whatever. The people that want to rip on us usually just do it on the internet instead of straight to our face. But I mean, we got aggressive love in St. George. They are pickleball people through and through. Like they're like, oh, we watch it every weekend, this and that, good energy in the crowd, love. And really just, they just like people from Utah too. Like they love their sports. It's something that they are just into. I remember like a couple interviews with some NBA players saying like, oh, how bad are the Philly fans? How bad are like the standard crazy fan places? And they're like, the worst place to go is Utah because they just love the Jazz, you know? So they love their sports. It was a great time, man. Just a beautiful part of the country too. Like they have everything nice and manicured. It's landscaped. You got the different color rocks popping. So it was a good time. And this Black Desert Resort, let me tell you, if they do exactly what they are hoping to do with their pickleball facility, that will be the number one stop of the entire year for the PPA Tour. They're having an LPGA event next month. They're having a PGA Tour event. It is just absolutely beautiful. And they're looking to put around a 30 court facility there and have the tournament there next year. So a lot going on in St. George. It's popping. I mean, crazy.
But what about Little Valley though? Little Valley is just like a staple.
It is. It is a staple. And I mean, I've played hundreds of hours of pickleball at Little Valley early on in my career. So a special spot in my heart. But if Black Desert Resort gets it done, I think
Little Valley would be a bad smell in the past, you know?
A bad smell in
what
the
is
past.
That?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So
smells like Little Valley.
Yeah, Little Valley. But anyway, you got Zion, you got Bryce Canyon, you got Vegas 2 hours away. I mean, there's a lot going on. Whatever lacks in the actual city, you can find very close to you. So I'm just a fan of the place. I enjoy it.
Sounds like you're on the local council.
I am. Yeah. Put me
local
on the
city council. Just the travel committee. Bring in the economic development.
Yeah, I'll be sending out my fee for this episode to St.
Sponsored
George.
By St. George, Utah.
Yeah. Oh, God, shocker. When it grins hairs just on me, I don't understand how. Anyway.
Oh, I can tell you how.
Yeah,
because you guys live together and there's probably her hair all over the place.
Yeah, and
there's no mistaking which hair is yours, which hair is hers, Adam. So there's no like, oh, maybe that's your hair, you know?
Mine can only be so long. So there you go. Yeah, so no, it was good times. Enjoyed it, and now ready to rip, roar, rocket in North Carolina starting tomorrow, actually. So,
Are you driving?
What, to North Carolina?
Are you gonna make the flight over from
15 minutes away?
It's in Raleigh, yeah.
Yeah, it's in Cary, which is
because they did it in Charlotte often, right? Early a couple years.
No, okay. I think it might have just been 1 year in Charlotte. Now it's at Cary Tennis Park, and actually we have let me look at it. So it's somewhat of a weird situation here. Let me look at this real fast. Where Roll X. So they have the NCAA tennis tournament at this facility relatively soon. So they're not allowing the PPA to paint the courts. So we're actually going to have Roll X on top of tennis courts for the event.
And Roll X is just a rollout court?
It's a rollout court. So yeah, so it's unfortunate that that's the case. But I think the rolls have been getting better and better from what I've seen. I mean, of course, it's not a regular court, but like a couple of PPAs at the convention centers last year and some downtown cities, and it seemed to get better and better. So hopefully this is the best version yet. We'll have to see.
Yeah. I mean, my experience is as long as they're rolled out on a tennis court, right. It's always played very well. Like that's what we do at the APP up in, in Flushing Meadows at Billie Jean King Tennis Center. Gotcha. And it always plays fine if it's laid out on a tennis court.
Yeah, you need it firm, like, because we've had it on carpet before, and that was a bit of an issue.
But so even even concrete convention centers, Adam, it's not built for tennis, right? It's not a completely flat surface, so there's going to be, like, little indentations and stuff like that. So that's where it gets a little sketch, but if it's a completely flat, hard surface, it's going to be money.
Yeah, so that's going, and I'm excited. Sleep in my own bed 15 minutes away. Mama and Papa Stone are here. Little baby AJ is going to make an appearance.
Oh, we got a whole crowd. Yeah.
Legend of the game, Corinne Carr. I mean, come on, let's go.
Adam's hometown tournament. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Nice. So Rob, I I've been calling some matches, doing what I do. And I tell you what, there can actually really be a debate for a couple players in specific disciplines, or just in general, factoring in all three disciplines, being called the best player in the world right now. It's pretty wild. I mean, we have Christian Alshon just absolutely rip-roaring in all three disciplines. You've got Andre Daescu, who just seems to be able to not lose in men's doubles. You have some tons of singles players kind of trading off championships and making deep runs. It's a pretty wild time in men's pickleball right now. And I think that there's a couple cases that can be made to where it is not Ben Johns in the top spot.
Yeah, which is a wild conversation to even have, right? Like, we, talk 6 months ago, wouldn't even be a conversation on the radar. But it's just kind of shows bunch of guys have really turned it on. I mean, Andre's having just an all-time year. You know, it's April 1st, but it's he's getting the men's finals or winning the tournament nearly every damn tournament.
Every damn tournament. So for
regardless of partner.
Yeah, so for Andre, of course, solid but unspectacular mixed results. So, I mean, you can't put him in and does not play singles, so you can't put him in the in general category, but for men's doubles alone, absolutely, he's right there.
Begs the question: if Andre played with Anna Lee, I think we would absolutely be talking about him being the best man in the world across both disciplines.
Right, I agree, and I think that there might be 5 to 7 guys or somewhere in that range that if they played with Anna Lee, they would win most of the time.
Keep going, maybe higher, up, higher, up, higher.
If Robert Nunnery and Adam Stone played with Anna Lee, they would be winning a lot of titles with her. Yeah.
Unlikely. But but beyond 5 to 7, Adam. Yeah, I would put it to at least the top 10. I might push it to top 15 guys.
Right.
If they played with Anna Lee, they would be favored to win the tournament.
I mean, she is absolutely obscene. Just like a couple tournaments ago when she had a little tiff with Hayden Patrickwin, and Hayden Patrickwin told her, "Your dinks are too high." Your dinks are too high, and she said, "Don't talk to me like that." And then she proceeded to just fire at his throat for 15 straight points and win a significant percentage of those hands battles against someone who has very good hands. Who else is doing that? No one. Absolutely zero else. No. And Anna Bright has established herself as a clear-cut number two, in my opinion, but she can't do anything like that from an offensive perspective like Anna Lee can. It's something to behold.
We always talk about it. I don't know how, like, we talked about needing to interview women on the podcast to talk about, like why aren't you guys getting closer? What is, like, they're gonna be like, I don't know.
She's like, I don't know. One.
I don't know how you close the gap, but, you know, as we see in all sports, the gap eventually closes. But we usually don't see players this dominant at 16, 17, 18 in a sport, right? We usually see that dominance, you know, mid to late 20s, and then they're done playing by 32. So this is a really, really unique situation in terms of if she wants to play pickleball for the next 10, 15 years, I mean, it's... the sport's at its infancy, but man, it's hard to picture what it would take to kind of take her down.
Yeah, well, with her, with the competitive spirit that she displays, I think she is going to be playing for 10 or 15 plus more years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically, just from age-related upside, you would have to say that her peak and her playing at the peak of her powers is like 5 to 7 years away. So what, you know, what she's doing right now at 18, and I understand it's a little bit lower of an age for females than males to get their absolute peak. But yeah, it's crazy. And it's just crazy. And I think from a skill set perspective for mixed doubles, that I actually think Alshon is number one. Now, I mean, it's hard to maybe put him in that spot, but if you factor in Anna Lee playing with BJ, and you factor in what Alshon can do from a reach athleticism perspective, which I do believe is superior to Ben, then I think that just in a vacuum, you could say that Christian Alshon is a better mixed doubles player than him. It's crazy.
Yeah. It begs the question if, like, you know, all, this is how I always think about these types of scenarios in my head is, okay, if Anna Lee and Ben played Anna Lee and Christian, what would that look like?
Right.
And then I'll just tell you where my brain went with this, and it kind of hurts my head a little bit to think about it. And then I pictured, okay, well, we have two Anna Lees on court. What if we had four Anna Lees on court? We had two Anna Lees playing two Anna Lees. What would that match look like? And I'm still kind of thinking about it. But it would be absurd. It would be, yeah. Anyways, okay. Anna Lee and Christian. I'm not convinced Anna Lee and Christian would beat Anna Lee and Ben, honestly.
Yeah, I get that. But
it's close. It's very close.
Yeah, it's very close. And I'm just saying Christian, like, Ben is maybe not capped out. He's a smart guy. He likes to go to the lab and work on stuff. You know, I'm not going to say he's capped out. But Christian definitely is not from a shot selection, fully figuring out how to completely win. He's only been playing, I don't know, maybe somewhere around 3 years, give or take. I'm not positive on that. So I don't think that there's capped out at all. And in a vacuum skill set and mixed doubles, I still think that Christian Alshon is probably the best. Even though he doesn't fully know how to completely win and dominate yet, I think that he will get there. He wants it really badly too, and has the mindset to get to that point. So from a mixed doubles perspective, I think that it's a fair statement at this point.
Yeah, I think it is too. And I think, you know, you got to look at it of taking Anna Lee out of the equation, and you put, let's call it Christian and Etta Wright versus Ben Etta. And we, like, who wins that? Or Christian and Catherine.
Tui Onatoa.
Yeah, sorry.
Tui Onatoa.
Yeah. Sure.
I've done that live on the broadcast, so all good. Yeah, it's great.
Well, I think it's acceptable because that's been her name for
very
long.
But let's just think about this, and this was an eternity ago. Yeah. I get it. But if you put them both with Catherine, Ben and Catherine lost to Anna Lee and Riley like something obscene at nationals.
Like 0-1.
It was a couple years ago. I know it's much different now, but just as an example of something that could happen that way. So,
no, I think that's a fair statement, Adam. I think, he's just so damn athletic and so explosive on the first step, and has such good reach and length. Like he's got probably the perfect size, I would say, for pickleball in terms of being able to move and having the speed and quickness and explosiveness on the first step, as well as having the reach and the raw power. He's definitely more explosive than Ben. Ben's got, kind of more of the efficient, smooth movement, but Christian, I would say, can cover more court and do more with it and track down more balls, especially like in singles, for example.
Yeah. And I do like the size comment. I think that, like if you're talking about like a Sam Querrey type size, there's some holes. There's some holes on your body that it's difficult to get to. Yeah. So I think right around that 6'1 to 6'3 with great movement and athleticism is like about perfect, So you have all the length and everything that you need, but at the same time, you can still cover everything and you don't have the length isn't going to become a detriment to you. So, which I think it can for some players if you get above a certain height. So, and I would say in mixed doubles that he's probably the only one that is coming to mind. But in men's doubles, I think that there's a few that are close to being able to stake that claim, or actually could stake that claim for the best player in the world. So, it's very interesting stuff right now.
Selkirk Cork Strike, lightweight, breathable,
seamless. So,
what I do like is the all one color. It's a nice style.
Yeah, it looks good.
These are available.
Rob, 6 months sole guarantee too, which is super important for me because I'm an explosive athlete and a high-end mover, world-class foot speed and footwork. So sometimes I just blow through the soles. I like to tie my shoes really tight, and sometimes I get the loop of the tie and I slide on that and it rips, and I hate it when that happens. Seems to be my left big toe area, just sole gone. So to have that for 6 months is something that I need.
You mentioned Sam Querrey. I would say, to Sam's credit, Adam, that he's probably, is he 6'6"?
I think right around there, yes.
He's the best 6'6" player in the world. I'll give him that.
Oh, hey now. What about, let me think of a couple other ones. What about Andreas Seelstrom?
He's the best 6'10" player in the world. Sorry, Isner.
He's the best 6'10". Sorry, Isner. You're out. Seelstrom's in there. He had a match. Yeah. Who else is extremely tall?
Greg Dow, 6'4". Is Greg Dow the best 6'4" player in the world?
Probably not, but I. It's probably some guy that we've never heard of before. I'm trying to think of other extremely tall
Greg,
people.
Greg, you hear that?
Here's an old school one. People probably won't remember this. Rick Roberts. He played way back in the day. He's from Utah, but he was probably 6'8", I would say. So yeah, there's some tall ones. I know I'm missing somebody, but anyway, this could be a topic for a different day on terms of optimal physical skill set and size for playing men's pickleball. So let's go through the men's side.
We talked to Andre already. We mentioned Christian. Obviously, there's Ben.
I mean, Andre, it's obscene. Like how did he get his hands faster? Like you can make these little small improvements in hand speed, and of course you can get more experience with the patterns and the way the attacks are coming your way to be in the right position. But it seems like Andre has like significantly improved his hand speed from when I was playing him, and now his paddle is never in a bad spot. His combinations and the firefight ability that he has is wild. And I don't really get how he's made that jump in his mid to late 30s after basically playing an old school style and just transitioning over to new school. It's nuts.
Yeah. Do we not feel the paddle it's partially paddle.
Sure.
I'm not sure that he's made necessarily a jump on the hand speed, truly. Even like when we played, I mean, his paddle was always in the right place. He might not get a lot on it, but he was getting it back in the kitchen. It was very Adam Stone-esque where he'd get caught in a bad spot, but he'd get it in the kitchen. You wouldn't counter it. It feels like now when he's getting his paddle on it, it's really, Yeah, it's just it's got some more velocity on it.
More pop.
Which is, yeah, I think a really big deal for him who doesn't have a lot of raw power.
Which is crazy because I heard he had a huge serve in tennis. Yet when he hits an overhead, it's just like good, not great. But
and
it's
you
like
think pop. He have better angles too.
Yeah, but it's like the pop. Maybe you're right. So maybe the hand speed has always been there, but the life, the deflection, and the life off of the paddle is something different. But bottom line is it's different. And it's very impressive. I mean, him and Alshon and beat Dylan Frazier and Deckelbar 1-0. They beat him 1-0. That is nuts. Both Deckel and Dylan have titles. Dylan has several with J.W. Johnson. And to beat that team 1-0, oh, baby, that stings.
Well, Andre's just one of those players that we've talked about. Like, maybe his greatest asset outside of his paddle being in the right place and not missing many balls is he's the best competitor on tour. Hands down, in my opinion. He wants it more than anybody, and not only that, but he takes 0 points off, which is a credit to, you know, scores like 0-1, or like when him and I played Dow and Scarpa 0-0 in a final. Like, he just takes 0 points off, and that'll get you some score lines like that, especially when people get frustrated because every damn ball is coming back and Andre is giving you nothing.
Yeah, and like 11-1, 10-0 or something like that. He's giving Christian the crazy eyes and gritting his teeth. Andre, bro, you're going to win, man. You're going to win.
Killer, the killer instinct, the like step on the throat is big time there. It's huge.
Yeah, but yeah, when he gives the gritted teeth, I know you've seen it a million times. You're just like, all right, bro, we got this.
Adam, look into my eyes. Look into my eyes. All-time quote.
Yeah, all-time quote. So, and I'll tell you right now, I would not have even considered this person to be in the conversation 6+ months ago. But Federico Stakshrud is playing ridiculous from the left. He also has found more pop on his counters, and he has found a variety of offense with the backhand roll. He's got low pace, he's got mid pace, he's got full pace, and he can go to all the spots. And I will just put him just a rung below Andre, but he has impressed me so much to start 2025 in men's doubles. And I never thought he was an afterthought, but I just thought he was in that second tier, and I am changing my mind quickly on that.
What's made you change your mind? I don't know if I'm quite there in terms of, and I'm sure you've seen more matches than I have, but I've seen a fair amount, even recently, and man, it just feels like he can go into some holes where he's just making a bunch of random errors. He's getting lit up a little bit. Hand speed's probably not quite as there as those top couple guys we mentioned. What do you feel like on Fed spot? Is it having more variety on the backhand roll, the attacks?
Yes,
I mean, he doesn't miss much, right? He really truly does not make many unforced errors. And
I think he's similar to Andre from a left sider, a right-handed left sider. Like, their styles, Andre has a little bit more length, and I think right now Andre's hands are a little bit hotter. But to answer your question is what I brought up earlier. It's the offense that he's able to create and his counterattack. So he's clearing his body better. He's got a simple, quiet paddle position out in front, and it's just better than it was. So I used to, you know, when he was having success with Hayden Patrick, when I thought it was maybe not significantly more, but more Hayden just being an alpha from the right side. And now I'm kind of coming back to pretty even there between those two, or even Fed being a lot of the reason for them making runs. So
and look, the results consistency speaks for itself. There's a reason points wise he's, I don't know what he's at right now, but 1 or 2 probably. 1, 2, 3. Right. But that just speaks to, you know, how deep he goes every tournament. And do you think it feels like there's been a little bit of a let up on the single side? And of course, it'd be impossible not to at some point, right? With how consistent he was last year. But what do you attribute that to? Is the field just getting stronger? Yeah.
Feels just getting stronger. I mean, I think he didn't in 2024, I think he didn't medal like 3 times or something.
Yeah.
In the entire year. So your statement is exactly right, Rob. You know, there had to be some form of letdown, and it's basically 100% field for me. So he has he still might have around the highest floor of anyone, but there are some players with a better ceiling. So if just Like even like someone like a Hunter Johnson, I think if Hunter Johnson plays extremely well, I think he's going to beat Fed most of the time just from a shot making perspective. But Hunter can have a lot of errors, which is more rare for Fed. So I would just say the field's getting better and better and better in men's singles, and it's just such a grind to make it through those draws. I think that's the only difference for me. Fed's still an absolute stud.
Just side note on this, Adam, on the Fed singles conversation. Took a L to Mr. Jack Sock. Jack got to the finals.
Yeah.
What do we think about Jack at this point in terms of, I mean, obviously singles on any given day, he could beat anybody.
Yeah.
No question.
He's a shot maker. I mean, I think he's actually who he ended up playing in the finals. I think he's similar to Hunter Johnson, you know, a little bit bigger and maybe can cover the court more with that length. I'm not so sure. Hunter's pretty quick too, and efficient mover, but it's just like Hunter gets hot with the forehand. Same thing with Jack. It's like good freaking luck.
Not much you can do. Yeah.
good luck. So Jack, he has been, I think he's a little fitter. I think he's been slowly committing to like play the right optimal way for him. And he's still, in the grand scheme of things, hasn't been playing that long full time. So he is in his early 30s. So that is a factor, and he is just naturally a big guy. So, you know, maybe there could be a dip in movement at some point, but I think when he's playing his best, he can absolutely beat anyone with, I mean, so some of the shots in the forehand and like the drop volleys that he's hitting, it's pretty disgusting, but he will have 3-5 minute stretches where it's pretty ugly still. In terms of an unforced error perspective, and that's probably the only reason why, you know, he's not considered as, you know, one of the top couple singles players, even though he is right on the cusp of that.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for entertaining that little sidebar. So okay, back to the men's. So we have Christian, we talked to Andre, we've talked Fed.
And now we have four young guns that all have a chance, okay?
To get in that mix, yeah.
To get into that mix. And I was actually...
But quick question, Adam, before we go there.
Please.
And I was just thinking about this before the Jack tangent. Would you ever consider a person that plays the right consistently somebody that could be labeled as the best men's player in the world?
Yes, I would. With the style that they're playing now, yes. Because of how these guys, and there's three of them on the list that I'm about to call, the amount of pressure that they can put from the right side from an offensive perspective with their backhand rolls. It used to just not be possible. You couldn't get enough spin to attack low from the middle from the right as a right-hander, and now you can. So I actually thought that Hayden Patrickwin at the end of 2024 could have been called or been in the conversation for the best men's doubles player in the world. And I think that he has taken a very small dip and had a small plateau. So I'm going to put him in this clump with Gabe Tardio, CJ Klinger, and JW Johnson. CJ is still more of an upside play. He's not quite there from a consistency perspective as Gabe and Hayden are from the right side. And of course, JW Johnson, a left side player, but they're all, if they just take any one of those four, take a small step, maybe a medium step for CJ Klinger, they could be in that conversation, in my opinion.
I have to feel, okay, so the way I'm thinking about the right side player, call it a Tardio, call it a Hayden, is until they're able to cover court, like a left side player would cover court and come over and take 65, 70, like from the right, to me, it's hard to think that they could be the best player because they're not really dictating. They're not structuring the points as much as the left side player is. To me, we just haven't seen that, right? We haven't seen, just think about how somebody play like a Ben plays from the left where he's taken 70% of the court. Will we ever see that from a right-handed player on the right side where they're dictating, you know, fully from the right side where they're taking 70, the left side player is taking 30.
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's a fair statement. And maybe a rebuttal from me on that is the right side player can neutralize the other left side player better than left to left can. So, so maybe they can only get to that 65% in terms of taking 65% in terms of taking court from the right, but they can, whether they are attacking first or counterattacking the other left side player, they can neutralize them or get an advantage in that game within the game heads up matchup where left to left can't really do that. Even though more cross court attacks are coming into the game, it's still, especially in men's doubles, it's a straight ahead situation. So yeah, that's me playing devil's advocate there, even though you have a fair statement.
And just thinking about what you said, there's part of me that agrees with you in terms of what you're like you mentioned, with that kind of backhand in the middle, what you're able to do with the spin now, you're taking away a middle dink, which has historically been a pretty safe place for you to go. And not only that, Adam, but I would say I'm a more of a right side player, obviously. So the one safe spot that you don't want to go to a right side player is kind of their outside foot, because that's where we have options, right? That's where we can roll middle, body, line. It's dangerous getting us out on the forehand wing out wide, essentially, right? Yes. So if that right side player is pinching more middle, taking away the middle, it's going to be very tempting for a player to take you back out wide, which is actually, if you're a good mover, that's exactly what you want, to take a ball off the bounce on your forehand side. You just have so many places you can go with that as a weapon. So, yeah, that's me arguing against myself and, agreeing with you. But I think just these little aspects are going to be really interesting to watch, especially as we have guys like Tardio, guys like Hayden that really pinch middle more. They're playing with guys that like to take a lot of court too, right? But what if we had somebody that's just incredibly consistent on the left, not very attackable, but doesn't take a lot of court middle?
J-Dub.
I would say J-Dub still takes too many forehand dinks in the middle, where it's a very safe spot because there's not much he could do off that little scoop dink that he does.
Right. Like as soon as he the wrist goes like that, you're like, I'm safe.
He's got to stop hitting that.
He's going to scoop it. Yes.
Stop hitting that. Roll that, dude. Yeah. Roll it.
Yeah.
Top spin, roll.
And the thing is you could say this, and you know, there could be a conversation that Gabe Tardio's style plays better with J.W. Johnson than it does Ben Johns.
Because
J-Dub is a capped out 60% take the court from the left.
And he's
unattackable. And when you're not spread that thin and that wide over to the middle, your counters are better because you're more stable and you're more balanced. Like that's why you can attack. That's why Anna Lee can get away with a lot of what she does in mix, because the dude's going like this and he's off balance. Yeah. And then she pulls a trigger and he's getting lit up. So I think one of those right side alphas playing with someone with the J.W. Johnson style over there could work out perfectly. And, you know, we'll just have to see. J.W. has played with Gabe before, and I don't believe he's played with Hayden, but that could be something that could work in theory.
J.W. and Hayden would be super interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, and I will say that J.W. just occasionally gets into these little funks where it's, it might not last long, or he just gets this, I don't know how to describe it exactly, maybe just a hair flat. And he can be attacked a little bit. He's cleaned up the backhand dink a lot to start 2025. And I actually do think that JW has a pretty strong competitive spirit, even though he doesn't always show it. He wants to win. He wants to win in a big way, But I will say occasionally I see J-Dub be flat, and some of those other left side studs, you don't quite see that.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. And I think it's super interesting to think about the right side being a more alpha position. Who knows if it ever will be. Will a backhand in the middle out of the air ever be stronger than a forehand middle out of the air? Probably not, but I think it does open up different options. Like on the forehand, like we talked about, going out wide off the bounce, there's just so much more you can do than a backhand off the bounce out wide. I know it's changing, but yeah. I would still say most guys are going to prefer a forehand off the bounce versus a backhand off the bounce.
Right. And even also that right-hander from the right attacking in the middle, that can allow the left side player to kind of fade to the left and load up.
Big
so
time.
You have so you have the right sider flicking and then sitting there with this, and you have the left sider shifting to the left, and just, I mean, where do you go with the counterattack right there? I mean, as long as the flick is good enough, or basically 5 out of 10 or better, that is a lot of paddle in your face as if you're counterattacking those shots. So
100%.
This is a fun discussion, and you know, I could go on for a while about this, but I think it's very exciting times in men's pickleball. And, you know, I don't know if I would be able to take that leap and say someone else besides for Ben is on that pedestal, but I think it's pretty damn close.
Overall across all three events right now, you have to, so there's requirements are you have to play all three, and overall consensus across all, what would you say?
There's only two people in that conversation right now. Christian and Ben, because Fed has his level dips and mixed. So he has the other two to be in that conversation, but I do think the level dips and mixed, and that would take him out of there. And even, you know, and like, just for instance, someone like Hayden, his level dips a little bit in singles and mixed, even though he could be, you know, in the realm of that conversation for men. So, so I think it maybe someone for all three disciplines who is not on the level of Ben and Christian could be JW, because he's very good at everything. And you know, maybe some of that's a Georgia factor. I don't know. I love J-Dub. I'm not trying to knock him at all. I think he's amazingly good. And I think when he gets hot with the hands, it's as good as anybody with some of the flicks and some of the counterattacks that he has. So it's a very fun conversation. And I think that,
like, and a conversation we couldn't have for a very long time, which is
you could not.
Like, thank God we could have the conversation now.
Yeah, you really couldn't. You would kind of start saying something. You'd be like, never mind. You know, he's not there. But these players are there, and I think that after we get through a couple PPAs with the whole MLP slate, that's a chunky little 3 or 4 months there. The second half of the PPA season in the fall, I think we could see somebody step up and possibly seize control of it. And probably the most likely candidate is Christian Alshon.
Yeah. And I think as we go into MLP season, Adam, that we have to take into account, if we're looking at who the best player is overall, we have to take, like, it's a good barometer to see, like, okay, if you're the best player, then you should be able to weather the storm with different partners, right, in different situations, different scenarios. So I think it's impossible to leave the MLP results off the table. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, who really performs well in MLP as well.
So MLP in the team format is the fourth discipline. So you should be able to will your team, not always, you know, sometimes the talent gap is too much, but you should be able to will your team or have that team aspect be a feather in your cap if you want to be considered the best player in the world. So I think that is absolutely a fair statement to put Major League Pickleball team format as the fourth discipline.
I like that, Adam. All right. I feel like this was a meaty episode, buddy.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
All right. Well, we will wrap up North Carolina next week, then. That'll be fun.
Perfect. Let's rock.